Hi, I'm Lana, and I'm walking the 606 on a sunny day, and you're listening to Outside the Loop, Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine.
Thank you very much. Welcome to Outside the Loop. Yes, this is Chicago's almost above ground audio magazine. I am Mike Steven. It is wonderful to be here with you on this first show of 2025. What we do here on this program is take a look at local issues and topics that don't always get mainstream media attention. Bob Ferguson is our engineer on duty today in the WGN radio studio. So happy new year to Fergie and happy new year to you. New year, new you? Nah, I won't even bring up the topic of New Year's resolutions because really, are you going to be talking about those come March? Yeah. I hope you had a wonderful New Year's Eve celebration, whether you were downtown at a restaurant, at a bar, enjoying some fabulous drink package, some air quotes going on there, or just at home having a quiet evening. Me, my family stayed over at my in-laws, and I was in bed by 10, and I loved it. Now, I'm sure 21-year-old me would like a word with 44-year-old me about that. In any case, here we are in 2025, and this week was kind of weird, you know? We were coming out of that time after Christmas and leading up to New Year's. Are people even working? I guess kinda. Do calories count if ingested during that time period? Absolutely not. Should you be taking down your holiday decorations? This is another burning question. Some folks think that December 26th is the time to remove the lights, to take down the tree, and to put away the mistletoe. Personally, I say leave up the decorations. Thanksgiving was so late this year, and many of us wait until Thanksgiving to decorate for the holidays. Enjoy the time you have with your decorations. Permission granted to be festive. At my house, are we guilty of leaving a rogue decoration or two up through January? You know this. So 2025, boy, what is going to happen this year? We can look down the road and make some predictions, but we know that in Chicago, taxes are going up a bit. But hey, the good news is the city council scrapped Mayor Johnson's plan to raise taxes on wholesale liquor by 35%, and garbage collection fees aren't going up, but Chicagoans will be paying more for streaming services, the speed camera network is increasing, personal property lease taxes are going up, and the list, unfortunately, continues. But that means that we will have to follow the money and keep an eye on how the city spends that money. That's why we need a strong free press in this town, and boy, I hope that 2025 is a year where hard questions will continue to be asked of our leaders. Also in 2025, I'm cool with the banning of Malort. We don't need it. Although if you are mindlessly scrolling on your phone looking for something entertaining, check out the video reactions of people trying Malort for the first time. It's hilarious, sad, and disgusting all at once. Okay, 2025, let's get Outside the Loop in the mix here. Coming up on the show today, we get an update on a couple of Illinois Department of Correction programs that have positive impacts on those who are incarcerated. Also, the great local band Poi Dog Pondering is playing a show in Chicago in a couple of weeks. We get a preview of that. And 2024 was a chaotic year in local education. We discuss what 2025 has in store for our local schools. New year, new you, or just same old you. You're doing great. ...2024 was quite the year in local education. And of course, there was a generous dose of politics mixed into this topic. So what does 2025 have in store for education in Chicago? Well, Rima Amin is a reporter at Chalk Beach Chicago. That's a local nonprofit newsroom covering Chicago education issues online at chalkbeat.org. And recently she wrote a piece looking at that question of what's coming down the pipeline here for education in Chicago in 2025. And Rima is here with us once again on Outside the Loop. Rima, nice to talk to you again. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Thanks so much for having me.
You got it. So All right, here, man, education in Chicago. What a year 2024 was, you know, this tension that exists between the mayor, Mayor Johnson, and CPS. That tension will probably continue in the new year here, but really, the amount of that tension depends in part on how the new 21-member school board will govern. What are you looking at specifically with this topic?
Yeah. So, you know, of course, as you said, it's a new board. There's 10 newly elected people. So primarily, you know, I'm interested and we're interested in how they're going to function as a 21-person board. You know, Chicago's never had a school board like this or of this size. And so it's going to be important to see, you know, do they create committees? How do they just function as one body? But more importantly, I think, you know, I'm going to be curious to see how the board operates ideologically. You know, do they lean towards Mayor Brandon Johnson's preferred policy agenda, or are they going to take a different approach than that board has taken in the past year? And so, you know, those are going to be the some of the biggest things, I think, to watch. And, you know, I will say, just practically speaking, more immediately, it's going to be interesting to see if they, you know, if they vote to approve a contract with the Chicago Teachers Union, which is being negotiated right now, because, of course, the board has to approve a deal and has to approve a budget amendment in order to pay for that contract. And then, you know, will this board, how will the board decide to pay for the contract? You know, will they go ahead and approve a short-term loan as Brandon Johnson, the mayor, has suggested to CPS, or, you know, will they find a different way?
Yeah, that issue of who's going to pay, I know that that's one thing you've been looking at Chalk Beach, Chicago. So you said that there are these contract negotiations for teacher pay, but also, you know, issues in their provisions like hiring new staff members to assist students. And that's a big part of this proposal, or some of these proposals. I know there's about 700 originally. But this has been going on for 8 months in this contract negotiation. And so the mayor really, you know, in terms of who's going to pay, I know Mayor Johnson said, well, maybe we could take out a short-term loan to pay. That didn't go over too well. So you asked the question, who's going to pay for this? But really, that's what this comes down to. And it's difficult because we want, obviously, teachers to have what they need to do their job effectively. We want them to get compensated well. But in the financial situation of Chicago and just the enormity of Chicago public schools, this is a really complicated thing. Who's going to pay?
Right. Yeah. It's a very critical question for CPS. You know, for the past handful of years during the pandemic, the district was flush with this federal COVID relief money that both, you know, that Chicago and districts across the country got, and the district decided to use it to hire thousands of new staff members and to create tutoring programs, the kinds of things that families and teachers talk about all the time that they wish their kids had in public schools. But that money has run out and officially expired, you know, last fall. And that has helped drive the deficit that Chicago has kind of always seen before that money came into play. And so now, before teacher contract negotiations or negotiations with the principals union are considered, the district is projected to see a $500 million deficit, you know, this upcoming fiscal year. And so, and the district hasn't accounted for the cost of the contract negotiations in its current budget. They haven't, you know, they didn't pass a budget while figuring out how to pay for this. So it's a huge question. And, you know, of course, when there's not money on the table, you either have to resort to cuts or savings, or you have to find a different source of revenue. And, you know, it doesn't seem like there's additional money coming from the city or the state that's, you know, more than what's already been committed.
Right. And that's something that you point out on chalkbeat.org in your piece, looking at some of these big questions for 2025. And I want to go back here to, I mean, I mentioned politics, and I always find that interesting. I think some of us maybe find it frustrating. I find it frustrating too at times. But what I think is really sort of fascinating here is going back to the board for a second. Now you've got this sort of hybrid school board, and those who are elected will take office on January 15th. So in just a couple of weeks here. And then you also have some holdovers. So in terms of the politics here, you mentioned, could they form committees? I mean, I guess where my mind went is, do they form sort of these factions? Are we going to see sort of these political factions emerge in this school board?
Yeah, it's such a good question. We're kind of already seeing that happen. So during the school board elections, there were candidates who were backed by pro-charter school, pro-school choice groups. And then there were candidates who were backed by the Chicago Teachers Union, which, of course, is ideologically aligned with the mayor's office. And so you could view that as kind of a pact or influential group. And then there were candidates who were not backed by either. And so you kind of saw those political alliances bloom there during the election. And then with all of the drama that surrounded CPS and the fact that, you know, the current board fired CPS CEO Pedro Martinez, or, you know, rather gave him 6 months notice before he has to leave the job. There were elected members from each of those political factions that I just mentioned that didn't like that the current board took that approach. And so there's also a group of electeds who have kind of banded together to say, you know, we don't want people to be bigfooting on things that we believe we should be voting on. And so I thought I knew where the political factions were. And now I'm just curious to see, like, maybe these potentially, you know, for lack of a better phrase, like, strange bedfellows will join forces and create their own factions and their own alliances, this year.
Wow. That is just hearing that, I think some of us have some fatigue, maybe getting out of 2024, going into 2025 here. But hearing that is like, oh, we just have to gear up, because it doesn't seem like this, you know, that anything is going to have closure in the immediate future here, that we have to sort of ride this out. And speaking of closures, and on that date that the school board's being sworn in, the elected school board, January 15th, the state moratorium on school closures expires. And I know that closing schools is pretty unpopular. We remember the Rahm Emanuel days when about 50 schools were closed. But really, it gets to a bigger question of declining enrollment in CPS. Can you explain this issue?
Yeah, so CPS has seen declining enrollment for, you know, about a dozen or so years. Until the past couple of years, enrollment has sort of stabilized, as we've seen, lots more migrant families and other kids come to CPS. But largely, yes, enrollment has really sharply declined. And that's meant that lots of schools in CPS have fewer students than, you know, far fewer students than the buildings can hold. And, you know, of course, at the same time, there are schools that are, overcrowded or that are filled, you know, to their capacity. But closing schools, as you said, is so deeply unpopular pretty much anywhere you go. But the issue here is that, yes, CPS is, as we discussed, facing financial challenges. And, you know, it is pretty difficult to program and to run schools that have far few kids. And if those schools are hard to staff, it's hard to create classes and to create, like, lots of programming in there, or to provide lots of, challenging or advanced courses, if you want. That's not a blanket statement, but it can be in really small schools. And so, once this state moratorium is up, it will be up to the board to decide if they want to take any actions to potentially consolidate schools or close them. But again, you know, I don't know this for certain, but I would assume that the mayor's 11 appointees are not the sort of people that favor school closings. This is something that Brandon Johnson, that Mayor Johnson has really, really opposed. It's an issue that actually catapulted him into politics. And, the other 10, a majority of the elected school board members on the campaign trail said that's something that they would not consider, or they would not support. So, it's a tough thing to consider. It's a potentially tough choice to make, but I would be very surprised if even this new board took that route.
Right. And the mayor, in fact, doubled down on trying to provide more support for those neighborhood schools. And in the conversation of education in Chicago, you know, those neighborhood schools, those are the ones that I think we talk about as maybe quote unquote struggling schools and where we see the declining enrollment. So he's come out and he said he wants to support those specific schools.
That's right. And, you know, it depends on where. If you're looking at, you know, oftentimes neighborhood schools in, you know, Chicago's low income communities are communities of, that are, you know, majority Black or Latino. Schools in those communities tend to have fewer students. They tend to be, you know, relatively, they feel less resourced than schools on the north side. And in other places in the city. And so, yeah, the administration has made it a commitment to beef up resources for those schools. And you will see people who cut across political lines who really essentially believe the same thing, that, you know, your child, you should be comfortable sending your child to your neighborhood school. You shouldn't have to feel like you need to use Chicago's school choice system when you send them 2-3 miles away. But how to get there is where people disagree. And I think that this board could choose to continue to find ways to, again, send more resources to neighborhood schools. But the real kind of underlying question there is, where are you going to find those resources?
Well, that's a big question. So many questions as we now get into 2025 persist when it comes to local education. Buckle up. It's going to be quite the year. That's my prediction, I suppose. But we will continue to see what Rima Amin is writing about at chalkbeat.org. She is a reporter for Chalkbeat Chicago, as well as her colleagues. That is a local nonprofit newsroom covering Chicago education issues. Rima, I appreciate the time. Thank you so much. And thanks for all of your reporting.
Thank you so much for having me.
Those who are incarcerated serve their sentences and are released back into mainstream society, often it can be a jolting and difficult experience. Former inmates don't usually receive any assistance getting back on their feet, and the possibility of recidivism looms large. In 2020, the Illinois Department of Corrections created a reentry unit to better ready people in state custody for release. The John Howard Association is an independent prison watchdog organization, and recently they took a closer look at state reentry programs. Jennifer Vollen-Katz is the executive director of the John Howard Association online at thejha.org, and she is here with us on Outside the Loop. Jenny, nice to talk to you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very welcome. So I said that those folks who are released, who are incarcerated and then released into mainstream society, it's hard to do that. Can you give us an idea of how a typical experience happens when someone is released from incarceration back into society?
Sure. I can't say that there's any one typical experience, but what I can tell you is there are definitely a shared number of hurdles and barriers that the people leaving prison face. And that applies to people, you know, who have a lot of outside supports and family and those who do not. You know, first and foremost, finding a place to live, making sure that you have a state ID so that you can use that to apply for housing and for jobs and for benefits and for a host of other things is critically important. There are pilots that have been started by IDOC to provide state IDs upon release. They have not yet been scaled, so that means a lot of people are still leaving without their state IDs in hand. Getting a job can be a huge challenge. For many people who are in prison, it was, you know, there were issues that prevented them from holding down a job to begin with, often, not always, but often. Mm-hmm. And if they are not getting treatment and programming and acquiring skills for employment later on, they often leave prison worse off than when they came, because not only do they not have any work experience or new skills or any kind of training that would be used to seek employment, they also have a felony conviction on their record, which continues to be a real barrier to employment for people.
Right. And so, we've talked about this before. When we think of those who are incarcerated, I think we sometimes jump to the extremes, the murder and the assault and things like that. And certainly that's true. But many people who are incarcerated, they are lower level crimes that they've committed. And so the idea here is that, okay, you made a mistake, you screwed up. Now, hopefully you learned a lesson. You want to get back out into society, but in a situation that's going to allow you to thrive. And oftentimes, I mentioned recidivism, we see that these folks are released back into the same sort of situations and communities and neighborhoods that they came from. And there is no way out except maybe for committing some of these crimes. And so they're back into the justice system. That's that cycle of recidivism. So the idea here is that we try to interrupt that and maybe provide some life skills and some training where people can get a leg up.
That's exactly right. And I think, you point to something important, which is this isn't just a handout or a benefit to people who are leaving prisons. It benefits entire communities and all of us. We want people to leave prison and become productive members of society. That keeps us all safer. It makes us more productive. It makes them tax-paying citizens. All the things that we hope people will do when they are enfranchised citizens, we would like people to do when they leave prison so that they don't recidivate, so they don't end up back in the criminal legal system. And it's really difficult coming out of incarceration to be successful. In many ways, we have stacked the deck against people. We've made it so difficult for them to get housing, to get jobs, and we've got the added difficulty of stigma that's been attached to them because they've been incarcerated. So we really have a long way to go in order to break this cycle that we have set up that isn't serving anybody well.
Right. So with that in mind, what was created by the Illinois Department of Corrections, Life Skills Reentry Centers and Adult Transition Centers. Tell us what these are and how they work.
Sure. So the adult transition centers have been around for a while. And in fact, we used to have more of them. I think at one point there were 10 different adult transition centers across the state. And adult transition centers are what some people refer to as work release. So if you are within a certain amount of months or years from your sentence, I think the new eligibility criteria puts people at, I think you can be up to 3 years from release to be in an adult transition center, and it's an opportunity to work in the community, save money while you are still under the custody and control of the Illinois Department of Corrections. So the facility they live in is an IDOC facility. There are rules, there are controls in place over people's day-to-day lives. However, there's far more independence. They make their own appointments, they go off to work, and they are allowed different kinds of visitation, like weekend passes home to visit family, than people who are in secure facilities. So that's what adult transition centers are. They're really kind of a work release program to help people acclimate to society in a gradual way and to give them some work experience, which helps them in numerous ways, including getting another job in a different community if this is not where they plan to reside after incarceration, as well as allowing them to save money, which will be helpful for them when they are released from custody. The second thing are life skill reentry centers. Those are newer and those are different. Those are still considered secure facilities, but they are focused on providing people with life skills. So they are program focused facilities. There's many more programs at these facilities than there are at any of the other secure facilities. And they are smaller and they tend to foster cultures of respect. And that also serves people really well. When we talk to people at the Life Skill Reentry Centers, they report feeling valued. They feel like they have better relationships with the people that work at the facility. That kind of inspires them to engage further in programs. And what you have is really sort of an upward spiral designed for people's success. And part of it is all the program opportunities and job acquisition skills that people are able to acquire. And part of it is just that life inside those facilities is far more humane and respectful.
And that's what you talk about in your report, which is up at thejha.org. The good news here is that these programs and these facilities seem to be working, right?
They do. The data shows that there are much lower rates of recidivism for people that have gone through these facilities. And again, it's just reflected in what people share anecdotally, in our surveys, in the quotes that they share with us or comments that they make in the open-ended response areas of our surveys. You know, people talk quite openly about feeling different when they're in these facilities and that helps them feel more prepared to reenter society and be successful.
And that's the good news. I guess the not so good news here that you address in your report is that these facilities are underutilized. Can you tell us what you mean by that?
Yeah, they are not at full capacity. There's a lot of space left inside all of these facilities. More people could be there and benefiting from the programming and the different environments. And that's something that the Illinois Department of Corrections really needs to work on scaling so that they are making the most of these opportunities and of these places that provide a lot more programming and rehabilitative focused activity than the secure facilities they run are able to offer at this point.
And why do we think that they are underutilized? I mean, you're talking about some really great stuff that they're doing here, how they can benefit those who are incarcerated. So why the underutilization?
You know, we've been given a bunch of different reasons. It's hard to know exactly. I mean, some of it has to do with the transfer process and IDOC being kind of cumbersome and backlogged. A lot of it has to do with eligibility criteria, limiting people based on things like offensive conviction, which we know is not a useful way to assess whether somebody is a good fit for one of these facilities or not. People change over time. What you did to get you into prison is really not reflective of your readiness to participate in a work release program or to be successful in a life skill reentry center. So, you know, really looking at who's a good fit from the point of interest in programming and changing and engaging in rehabilitative activity is far more important than looking at an offensive conviction. But unfortunately, too often that drives the decision making for placement inside a facility.
So hopefully this report maybe opens some eyes to say, hey, we should have more people in these facilities because down the road here, and I know that sometimes long term thinking is difficult for us these days, but down the road, this is going to benefit, like you were saying, everybody.
Absolutely. And there's a lot we can learn from these facilities. You know, we see that these smaller environments that are really focused on providing skills and programming, you know, they run so much better. People report feeling respected and valued. If you look at rates of violence, if you look at rates of discipline being handed out, all of that is much lower inside our life skill reentry centers. So part of it is understanding that when we create environments that are humane, that foster respect, and that focus on productive activity, we see a lot of different benefits, not only when people leave prison, but while they're in prison. So it really fosters growth and change and rehabilitation. And, you know, there's opportunity to do more of that throughout the system. And I think we'll see better outcomes if we do.
Well, you talk about this in your report as well. I mean, in terms of this humanity issue, and you and I have spoken about this before, this is a human issue. We're dealing with human beings who have made mistakes. Some of those mistakes are very serious here, but you say in this report that successful reentry really begins at intake. So when people are first coming into the system, having that sense of humanity early on, that makes a difference down the road too.
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. And that's something that we need to really focus on, and that is definitely, it continues to be an enormous struggle in our prison system. And part of it is lack of programming in terms of starting to focus on reentry from day one, regardless of how long someone is going to be in custody. And part of it is that so many of our facilities are unsafe, decrepit, inhumane. In the current climate, with staffing deficits and other challenges, make it very hard to improve conditions and treatment inside our facilities. Indeed, some facilities are really finding that they are going the other direction. So there's a lot of work to be done, and a lot more needs to go into creating facilities that are humane and rehabilitative. And it starts with not putting so many people in prison, keeping them in for so long, and then thinking about the facilities we have and how we can better use them and which ones we just don't need to run at all.
And all this, I think, goes back to something, again, you and I have spoken about, just knowing how this stuff works, how the system operates, transparency. And I know that there hasn't been a ton of that with the Illinois Department of Corrections, but you're working on shining a light on this. If we don't know what's going on and how this works, then nothing's going to change.
That's exactly right.
So this whole thing here really is based on transparency. Your work is really based on transparency. And I know that you will keep shining a light on these issues when it comes to correctional facilities in the prison system and justice overall in Illinois. We could check out this report on these reentry centers and the adult transition centers. TheJHA.org is the website. And Jennifer Volenkatz is the executive director of the John Howard Association. It is an independent prison watchdog organization, and they do a lot of great work here in the state of Illinois. Jenny, I always appreciate the time. Thank you for all of your hard work. Thanks for talking to us today, and Happy New Year.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you as well.
Let's get into some local music from Poi Dog Pondering. This band started in Hawaii 40 years ago and eventually moved to Chicago, and this is now home. Last year, the band released their 10th full-length album called Keep On Loving Each Other, and Poi Dog Pondering will be performing on January 24th and 25th at the Athenaeum Center. That's at 2936 North Southport in Chicago. We can check out poidogpondering.com. Frank Orrell is one of the founders of the band. He is a vocalist and a guitarist. He does a lot of things in Poi Dog Pondering. Frank, nice to talk to you again, man. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks so much for having me. Yeah.
You got it. So you were on this show. We were talking last year about the record Keep On Loving Each Other, and it's a great album. It sounds really, really wonderful. And I mean, I'm just thinking about this, 40 years of Poi Dog Pondering, has that sunk in? Because I feel like this is, you know, a band, like at 40, is it like a band midlife crisis thing? I don't know, but many bands don't make it to 40, you know?
Yeah, you know, I think in a way, it's kind of amazing to look back and think that it's been that long. But you know, I always knew I was a lifer. I always, you know, like yeah, in music and in art. So I was like, you know, yeah, I'm in this, you know. And it's become a thing where we enjoy what we do. Everybody in the band kind of does something else for a living. We do this because we enjoy it. We've never put that pressure on it for it to be the thing that maybe, you know, sustains us in some way financially, but just sustains us creatively. And so that's, I think that's one of the reasons why the band has been around for as long as it has, because we just do it for the pleasure and the art of it, you know?
Yeah, I love that, because I've talked to other musicians, and especially when you're starting out, and especially today, I mean, it's a totally different ballgame than 40 years ago, but to be able to sustain yourself on this, that's a really hard thing to do, especially today, because you've got streaming. You know, we've moved away from CDs, and I don't know, maybe we're back to vinyl to a degree, but you know, it's all social media promotion, and there's just so much, and everyone can do it with the technology. If you have, you know, a computer and some digital editing software, you can make yourself really sound wonderful. So it's kind of like a different ballgame today, but it sounds like you with Poi Dog Pondering, you're kind of, I don't want to say you're above that, maybe you're adjacent to it, and that's not what's driving you. It's more about the love of what you do.
Yes. And you know, it's, I think it's always been handmade. I mean, ever since the beginning, I mean, I started out making Poi Dog cassettes out of my bedroom and selling them on consignment in the local record shops. And everything that we've, you know, we have our own label. You know, we produce, you know, I produce our shows and, you know, like meaning like, you know, conceptually we go in and build the shows and we mount them. And all of this sort of stuff, it's just really handmade. And it's, you know, and even, you know, when it comes down to the albums and the artwork and, you know, and the recording of it, you know, we always pick someplace interesting to record the records. Like one time we rented out an old disused basketball gym and recorded. I mean, we always just find interesting places to record. But, you know, there's that handmade quality. We do exist completely outside of the, you know, I mean, our stuff's up on Spotify and stuff like that, but I don't really interact with any of that. You know, I just look forward to making the records and doing the shows. There's no way I'm going to compete with the whole modern landscape of music, you know, so it's just kind of like, yeah, we're just doing what we do, what we've always done, and just try to do it as best we can, you know?
Yeah, I think that's refreshing to be able to say that. You know, you're not going to get caught up in all of the sort of left turns that you could maybe in this business. And what I think is amazing is that the fan base has really sustained you over the past 40 years, especially in Chicago. I know you have a big following here. You're playing in January with Poi Dog Pondering, but isn't it amazing that the fans are still, I mean, you sound great, so I get why they're coming out, but the fact that they're still around and still loyal to you, I think is great.
It is. And, you know, it's one of the things that when, you know, we first came over from Hawaii and we came over to the continent, we were traveling around, we lived for a while in Austin, Texas. And then through touring, we came through Chicago, but we could feel Chicago, like it was palpable. You know, we could feel people's love for music here. Like, you know, and we, Max and I both like really loved, you know, Chicago. And then we ended up moving up here and then relocating the band here afterwards, you know, just because we love the city so much. And, you know, it's kind of a, you know, it's testament, you know, to the city itself and the people, you know, and their love of music.
Yeah. Well, I know, you know, when you look at the liner notes, does that still exist? But I think there are liner notes, technically they're digital now, but I was looking at this for your album, the album Keep On Loving Each Other. And I think, you know, speaking of Chicago, you look at who's on that record. And I know that at the outset, we should say there are a lot of members in Poi Dog Pondering. You have a small yeah. army. It's a great sound. But I'm looking at like some of the Nora O'Connor, Kelly Hogan, Doug Julin. These are just awesome local musicians who appear on this record. So you talk about that community. You talk about Chicago being supportive. I mean, it's right there. Look at who's on this record. I think that's a testament to Chicago. Everybody needs someone they can depend on.
When times are tough and you need a friend. True. Yeah. And, you know, like, you know, we're walking into this Athenaeum show, and this is like, you know, we picked this venue because it's, you know, we've never played there. It's a beautiful venue.
Yeah.
It's the space to do an unusual and different show. You know, it's different. You know, it's more of a theater. And then we're moving in, but we're going in there with like another layer of Chicago people, like Mark Kelly Smith, who's the founder of Slam Poetry. You know, he runs the Slam Poetry nights up at the Green Mill,
yeah.
And he's internationally known,
right?
And he's a Chicago legend. You know, he's like one of the, you know,
sure
is. And so, you know, we have him. We're doing some stuff, some songs with him. But I've worked with him a few times before. And we love him. And then we also have Joe Sonnefeld, who's just an amazing vibraphone marimba player. And Sophia Sanchez, who's also a Chicago. She's born and raised in Chicago and just a tremendous dancer, flamenco dancer, and also singer and musician. She's joining us. And Allison Chesley, the cello player, also known as Helen Money, is playing with us, and Matthew Davis. So we have like another layer of Chicago, you know, people in on the show with us this time, which is really lovely.
That's one thing I really like about your music is you do the rock stuff, the pop rock stuff really well, but then you might have some songs where, I don't know, there's a DJ involved, or you slow it down with some acoustic or some sort of, you know, ethnic influence on these tracks. And so it's rock and roll, it's pop rock, but it's more, and I guess it's more nuanced. And I think that it's cool because you don't know what's kind of coming up next. It might be something that's up tempo, or you're going to slow it down. But the sounds, even though it's unmistakably Poi Dog Pondering, you know, you kind of switch it up a little bit.
Yes, I mean, I've always loved a wide range of music, you know, international stuff and things from all over, and I end up playing with people who also have that palette, and all of those influences come into, you know, the sound. We've never been one of those bands that's just like, this is our sound and we only do this, you know.
Right.
There's some bands who do that. That feels really unnatural to me, because I think as a musician, you're constantly being inspired by something, you know, that you're hearing, you're incorporating into your thing, and moving forward and, you know, creating anew. And so the sound constantly evolves, you know, and I love that. I defend that, you know.
I love that too. I think that's that's great, because, you know, you're alive, you're awake, you're being inspired by what's around you. And I think that's, you know, relatable to a lot of people, because we are affected by what's happening around us. And to have an outlet like you do, what an absolute gift. And we can check you out live. So this is very cool. The Athenaeum Center, it's a beautiful room, 2936 North Southport in Chicago. And I know the January 24th show, that Friday show, is sold out, but the January 25th show was added. And so that's the second show at the Athenaeum Center. And tickets are on sale for that right now.
Yes. Yeah. Saturday night. Yeah. It's going to be, I'm looking forward to it. We're all getting excited, man, because we're in rehearsals and stuff, and getting excited for them.
That's awesome. So we can all go to poidogpondering.com, and that will link up. We can get tickets through that website. The big shows, January 24th and 25th at the Athenaeum Center in Chicago, 2936 North Southport, a night of great music, two nights of great music, although one is sold out, but the 25th show tickets are still available. And beyond that, Frank, I know it's. I know you're busy. Poi Dog Pondering is not the only thing that you're doing, but what else are you looking forward to beyond these shows in January?
Yeah, I'm working on a cookbook right now. I love to cook, and
nice.
And so I'm working on a cookbook right now. So that's going to come out sometime early in the year. Yeah.
All right. So the cookbook from Frank Orrell, lots of variety of a recipe in there, or what?
Yes. Yeah. I love to cook. I've been cooking for 20 years steadily, you know, for people, small dinner parties. And it's, you know, I've been culling this idea of a book along for a while. And then I was always thinking, like, you know, there's so many cookbooks out there. There's so many good real chefs on Reel and TikTok and things like this, people doing good work on YouTube, all of that. So I kind of like, what's the point of the cookbook, you know? Like, and for me, I feel like I do a lot of traveling. I play with Thievery Corporation. We do a lot of international traveling. So this is dishes that I picked up, like, in Istanbul, Brazil, and, you know, different places in the world there. And also from where I come from, Hawaii, lots of Hawaiian dishes and Japanese and Vietnamese dishes. And so it's kind of a curation of some of my favorite dishes. But more importantly, it's kind of like showing people a way to the way I think about food, which is like, where I don't cook with recipes. And I think about it in terms of, like, I look at the ingredients and go, like, I'm going to saute that. I'm going to braise that. I'm going to do, like, looking it's kind of like looking at your ingredients and seeing a dish inside the ingredient, inside the ingredients, and then cooking without measuring anything. Like, you know, so I'm attempting to do this with the book to
I love
show
that.
People how I look at food, because a lot of people tell me, they go like, I can't cook or I burn water. And so I want to give people the confidence to, like, you know, be cavalier in the kitchen and experiment and realize that cooking is really, you know, impressionistic, you know? And so that's the idea behind the book. Yeah.
I love that. And, you know, you don't need a measuring cup, just measure with your heart. You know,
right.
That's right.
Yeah, that's a good way. Yeah, that's a good thought. Yeah. Yeah,
that one's free. You can put that in the book if you want.
Okay, thank you.
We can check out PoyDogPondering.com. PoyDog Pondering playing the Athenaeum Center on Friday, January 24th. That show is sold out. And Saturday, January 25th, tickets are still available. Going to be a great night of music. Frank Orrell is the founder, vocalist, and guitarist for PoyDog Pondering. Hey, Frank, it's always a pleasure speaking with you. Good luck with these shows and the cookbook. We'll look for that, and I'm excited to see what you do next.
Right on. Thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time and having me on with you. Thank you.
And that will do it. Outside the Loop show number 951 is done. Thank you, as always, for listening to the show today. Thanks to Bob Ferguson for all of his engineering skills in the WGN radio studio. Happy 2025. Here we go. Let's make it a good one. I'll talk to you again next time right here on Outside the Loop.